Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at top-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim, as always, over at socialsuplex.com. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of them trying to convince me that they've got a plan, they're on the right track. It's 30 minutes of evidence of plans finally coming together, and now we're in a little bit, if we're going to be a little bit of a period of pretending those plans were always in place, when it very much feels like, okay, we figured it out over this period, enough with the faffing, we're just going to kick into SummerSlam. That'll feel more apparent when I review Monday Night Raw. When they talk about Money in the Bank, it's going to feel like same old. It's going to feel like same, because I've got an interesting run coming, because we've got Money in the Bank, which things happened on. I have to rewind to see, well, what life was like all the way back on ages ago on Saturday. The wrestling world has moved on very quickly with lots of different things. But we had Money in the Bank live from Inglewood, California, with the World's Collide show as well. We've got the confirmation of them going with Evolution and with the NXT shows, like them counter-programming the All In Weekend, which I already joked by saying, if you're counter-programming because your opposition is putting on their biggest and best show of the year, I'm never going to watch the counter-programming thing instead. It just, in my mind, very easy logic of obviously you watch the bigger and better show no matter who it's from. Obviously don't watch the counter programming thing. But we've got Evolution announced as well, so there's a lot of things playing up. So when I talked about them running a lot of shows, counter programming AEW doesn't help, because that means they're putting on even more shows specifically to be on against them. Luckily, most of that shit is NXT, and I don't watch a single minute of NXT. I did when this show started, but very quickly dropped it from the format, and where I am now is just like, yeah, I don't watch a single minute of it, which is fine. It's not me going, oh, I actually hate WWE and I don't want to talk about the developmental system out of a stance. Like, no, seriously. AEW's running, for the past 2 weeks, they've ran shows that are 4 hours long. Where am I meant to find this time? It's not a thing. Doesn't exist. There's no crazy big things. Like, quite literally, it's a battle of time now, and all the different entertainment interviews, they're not really competing against each other. They're competing against people's time from all the different things, from the streaming services to video games and mobile phone stuff. I'm lumping together all the mobile phone stuff. So it's fair to say, I don't particularly have the time to also watch NXT. It gets dropped by the wayside. Like, quite often I don't watch Collision. It just gets dropped by the wayside. But especially on a week with a big show, be it AEW or be it WWE. So this week I talk about Money in the Bank, and I've got Monday Night Raw, which flowed on afterwards. And last week I was very negative coming out of the show in terms of WWE's product. This week I'm not saying that I'm leaving the week being like, oh my god, they've completely changed me. I am saying you can see a plan. You can see an arc possibly getting underway with multiple characters, and that's something I can actually latch on to. And the show itself didn't have a massive lull in the middle. Finally, it's been like 5-6 weeks, however long it's been since I came back from COVID, just in a row of just show with hot opening, hot closer, and then just crowds not caring. Finally, we broke that streak. Therefore, it's obviously the best Raw of the year. That's the bar. That's the bar we're going for. Anyway, but to start off with the special that aired over the weekend, Money in the Bank, live on Netflix. We'll say a kind of a funny opening with a self-inflicted own goal. I got to get clarification about this from the other guys in the chat, because I didn't watch Money in the Bank live or anything. It wasn't on social media or anything whilst it was airing. So I watched it the next day, and the first thing that hit me was, oh, this arena looks half empty. I thought it was sold out. I thought it was going to be a decent show. Yes, in the odd episode of Raw, you started to see the crowd not be as full. But here I was like, no, like, the camera side seems like properly empty, and this is Money in the Bank. If this was like a B-level pay-per-view they'd ran still in America, like, I could maybe be like, ugh. But this is Money in the Bank. Like, this is one of those like guaranteed sellouts. Like, it was very confusing to me. Then I got it clarified that the earlier show ran by WWE, the AAA one, was only across the street. However, the parking didn't allow the cars to stay, so tons of people had to move and missed the start of the extortionately priced Money in the Bank show. Like, oh, what a self-owned goal. They're trying to make it look like there's this huge traffic for the AAA show that you're running in America, and immediately it has a knock-on effect. He didn't think about that. Like, bloody hell. Good to know that happens, you know, outside of the UK. It's like, oh, we're not the only one that does have crap like that. But anyway, let's jump on over to Money in the Bank, and let's start with the Money in the Bank ladder matches themselves. Before jumping over to the whole R-Truth stuff, let's talk about the actual Money in the Bank stuff. So let's jump on over and talk about some ladders. Yeah.
Naomi close to the top of the ladder. Is this Naomi's moment? Naomi has the briefcase. Naomi has missed Money in the Bank.
Last year's Women's Money in the Bank had an energy of chaotic mess to it. This year, for better or worse, felt a lot cleaner. Not that everything went perfectly, this is a pay-per-view ladder match after all. Like Roxy's head-scissors counter to the Razor's Edge, an example, as she nearly landed so awkwardly on her neck on the ladder. But it's a ladder match, like, shit still hurts. Overall, impressions of the match? Men's felt much better. It seems to be a running thing since Triple H just took over. You get a men's and a women's version, and the men's version just feels more focused. Like, I wouldn't say that this is like a bad match or anything. It's still entertaining, still Money in the Bank, still get your stunts, your little creative spots, your little character moments, whatever. However, the men's just felt more honed and focused. Felt like just more attention had been put in there, at least creatively, as well as just like, I don't know, agency. Just the match itself, it just feels tighter from beat to beat. Whilst women, there's always like an air of trying to be creative rather than it having the stronger character flow. And to be fair, most years they do come up with stuff like that, and it does have that energy in a positive way. And I do like the Money in the Bank matches feeling different. I don't want them to feel the same, so I do like there is that difference between them. It just means that the men's feels more honed and focused, like as an overall story of a match. But it was the same with the Royal Rumble. Like, the Royal Rumble this year was kind of just weak for the women's overall, and the men's had so much attention to it. It was so finely honed and focused. It was a really well put together match. In this one, though, there were nice little moments. Like, for me, it was a great idea to let Perez, Vicar, and Julia just dance for a little bit. Give them that space to present themselves as the future the commentator's scripts were painting them to be, before then having them individually dance with the three established women and have the flow and temporary alliances build from there. By design, a match built to showcase what the new faces can do, before the Aussie then ran riot. And we saw Monday Night Raw with Roxanne Perez qualifying with her Queen of the Ring match, in a bit of a spoiler, a bit of a surprise there. But that can follow on from what they did here in the Money in the Bank ladder match, where this was, they gave them time to shine. And I wouldn't be surprised maybe if we start to see Julia as well, you know, from SmackDown, maybe she gets her win too, just to exemplify that this Money in the Bank ladder match was specifically there to make them look good, and then they win their Queen of the Ring matches, and that just reinforces that the next generation is something special. And I would expect to start seeing that stuff on Twitter now. Just talking about how absolutely fine and strong the future of the main roster WWE Women's Division is starting to look, with Kerb kind of being that final piece. But it feels like that's all by design. That's the perception they're trying to create. And I feel like they are successfully doing it, which is why I don't even have to go on social media. I'm pretty certain that's what's going to be said on there. Ripley was the favourite. She was the one to get the spot of having the ladders piled on her at ringside, so she's like the biggest threat. But it was Stephanie Vaquer who was California's crowd choice. Not that they fully turned on Rhea or anybody else or anything, but the Chilean was easily being treated by WWE crowds as a star. The Devil's Kiss, which is those thigh-trapped head drives? That's my attempt to keep the description PG. Make sure the camera angle capturing it at the side, otherwise it's just ass. It's just a camera full of ass. So could it be over that they were on their feet as Stephanie booped Ripley's head onto a propped up ladder over and over and over? The dual code red by Roxy and Bliss also got a strong reaction. Julia and Perez laying hands atop the ladder got the panning drone shot right before the flow of the match had Ripley, Bliss and Naomi take centre stage for the finish. My big positive for the drone shot meant that when the drone was actively used in the main event later on, its inclusion felt natural, and the transphobe calling it over, it was like it didn't feel like a forced moment within there. The only forced nature is the character is forcing it to happen, so it's not a negative, like, oh, we're getting this thing with the drone, it feels a bit forced that we're doing this suddenly. No, the drone's been actively part of the show beforehand and it's become like a big focus with that drone shot of the two women at the top of the ladder. So you know that you've actively been shown and told, we're getting big drone shots here, the drone is involved. It's just a tiny little production note to make the viewer aware of its existence before it's then used for the spot later on. Bliss and Ripley up high, Naomi in, and push the ladder over to send the two bumping off the corner propped ladder, teasing the slow climb, and eventually Naomi pulled down the briefcase and won. I feel like it's kind of a safe winner. Well, to be fair, my winner, because I always had Ripley for Queen of the Ring. So I was perfectly fine with this being something else. That was my choice, because then you do Ripley versus Io at SummerSlam. And to be fair, could still do Io versus Ripley at SummerSlam. For all I know, there's a different direction they're building to, but that's what I'm assuming they're going to be building to. Instead, they've used this week to like give Ripley something. So maybe this is building to a Ripley big match at Evolution. But I feel like that destination at SummerSlam is still Io versus Ripley, because she hasn't got any other challenges. Unless you're doing Io versus... Do you give Roxanne the big push? But then that's not a big match in necessarily. We'll get to it when we talk about the Queen of the Ring stuff. Yeah, but in my mind, Naomi was relatively safe just because of the way where her character is currently positioned. It feels like an elevation to a title match was just naturally gonna happen. So he didn't need a Money in the Bank ladder match to elevate her, because she's already there. Which is kind of like, maybe that's why there's a little bit of rumors of, does Trips actually not like Money in the Bank? Just mostly because of the way it's been booked. ever since being in charge. And it's sort of stuff like this kind of adds credence to it, where the commentators were talking about how Money in the Bank elevates careers, but neither career is going to be elevated by it this year. That's not what happened at all. Like, neither winner will we be getting that. Last year we had Tiffany Stratton, and I generally forget the men's one. If it was somebody big, that's that sucks for them. I generally don't remember. But it did elevate Stratton. Whilst this year, Naomi would naturally be perfectly fine to face Stratton anyway, and exactly the same with Rollins as well. But I like the prospect of Rollins. We'll get to Rollins later. There's a lot of great ideas you can do with Seth winning it, even if that elevation of it hasn't happened this year. It's almost like that's a workaround for Trips not having to deal with that part of the Money in the Bank. Is really just used as a booking mechanism just to get it to what you want to do with the storylines anyway. But yeah, it was the women's one was fun, but when you watch the men's one, you will understand why I was kind of like just fine on it. It's like when you watch it by itself, like in a vacuum, you'll probably have a decent time. It's like it's entertaining enough. You won't go, oh, this wasn't bad or anything. But you watch a different Money in the Bank match, and then it kind of sticks out. Oh, okay, these are the parts that were missing. And I felt like the men's had those moments. So we'll jump on over straight away to the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. Seth Rollins, Penta, El Grande Americano, Andrade, Solo Sikoa, and LA Knight. I didn't realise how set up for the California market this match was until Penta, then Andrade, then El Grande all came out. And I was listening to the crowd's reaction for each one of them. I was like, oh, that's why Andrade qualified. I'm an idiot. I felt like such an idiot. I was just like, he's not been on TV. Why has he been booked? Oh, yeah, they booked him because he's in California. Yeah, I'm a moron. Not only is it in California, it's on week where they're promoting their ties to Mexican luchador wrestling. So it's like, oh, that makes, you know, that's what the image is trying to paint out, and they want to get the California crowd cheering. Yeah, I'm an idiot. Why did I not put that together? Like, generally in my notes here, from what I wrote these as I was watching the match, I was writing about how I appreciated the women's match from what they were doing more than I actually enjoyed it, just in terms of like the way that it positioned the three young uns and the three established ones and had them all dancing and build from there. But I enjoyed the men's a lot more. Solo in fun character ham, an interesting clash with Seth's more serious night of potential elevation, with Solo just full on hamming it up with his expressions and teasing and stuff. Both men received chants about other lads, OTC and CM Punk, as potential karma ending teased themselves without WWE needed to come up with any of the bits. Just like with Vicar earlier, Penta was California's chosen. It's just like this match had a much quicker flow, it was just way more solid. So there wasn't really any downtime for him to get his name chanted like there was in the women's one. The women's match just in between the bits just had more downtime, so you got to hear more Vicar chants. Whilst this one, the flow of the match itself was far stronger, so there wasn't any downtime for the fans to just start slowly chanting a name. More because they're chanting for the match. They're having a great time. He got his big pop moment too, as the former AEW lads performed a destroyer on the ladder. LA Knight was the man who set up the big ladder draped from the apron to the hard cam barricade. El Grande with the whiskey sponsored ladder from an earlier American made ad spot. We're into sponsored weapons being incorporated into the show now. Yay! Like, we are in Nick Khan's WWE. It is. It's recognisable. So yep, this is exactly where we are. Penta successfully fought off Grande, only to be stopped by Seth for a punchy punch and a cut to Chad putting the metal plate under his mask. Such a loud cheer whenever Penta was the sole man on the ladder. A spot with a huge, just forced build-up with a slingshot outside, instead having Chad climb up the ladder, which was lent on a ring post, then to a second ladder to float over to the whiskey-sponsored ladder. But the loud pop after was fully deserved, as the spinning backdrop from Knight to Gable looked perfectly devastating. It just looked great. It's like when Chad Gable climbed up one ladder, then used another one to just basically shot on over to the whiskey ladder that was in the middle. It felt a bit hokey and forced. But yeah, the crowd would be like, oh, yay, and doing some athleticism. But it felt a bit of a forced spot with all the bits in places. But then LA Knight delivered an incredible back body shot. He's like, you know what? It's fine. Honestly, the crowd was so damn loud for the entire closing flow following that move. A fast rotation of the other four lads that kept the pace up so impressively into the Killer Bees interference. The two lads beat up everybody. I liked the touch of Heyman specifically directing them to beat up Sikoa, leading into Fatu and Cobb facing down Breaker and Bronson to a great response. Big boys battle, baby. Setting up the flow of last year, where Fatu was Solo's difference maker. The two of them now in the ring, but that big ladder Knight set up earlier was in the background. Big Jacob ladder defender, until grabbing Sikoa's ankle. I hate you. It is such a reaction for the pop-up moonsault, but he wasn't done yet. We've got to get to that ladder. Spinning Solo, which I'll describe as an awkward Uranagi, crashed Sikoa off the apron into that ladder. We finally got our big Sikoa and Fatu blow off. As I was saying last week, I thought we were going to drag this out, but it feels like we're hurtling towards SummerSlam. Now only Seth and the whiskey sponsor ladder were left as the crowd chanted for CM Punk, but it was LA Knight who dragged us back into a flow between lads. But there was no Punk, no run out. Once Knight was dealt with, that was that. Similar to the women's ending, as the baddie slowly teased out the climb and eventually got to grabbing the briefcase. If I've got one negative, the segment with the interruptions felt like it took a very long time. So it's as much as I much more enjoyed this match, and it felt like the character beat that came to in the later half of it, it felt like there was enough stuff being built up in that first half where I was fine with it. And as soon as that stuff started happening, it felt like, in terms of a WWE flow to a match, it felt right, like it was absolutely fine. But
what is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Then it just kept on going, and it was so long, and they really soaked up the drama of Sokoa slowly climbing up the ladder, only to be grabbed by Fatu, who slowly reveals the I hate you nines instead of the I love you solo. He just pulls him off the ladder, goes to pop up moonsault, then relatively slowly tapes to the outside and throws him through that ladder like it was, there's a lot of downtime. The crowd were all white hot for it, they were going crazy. It came to a halt for them to tell their story, which is something I normally criticise, but I feel like in a Money in the Bank ladder match with chaos, that's the type of booking which is fine, because I'm not somebody to call thing equals bad. It's more of like context driven in a way, and obviously with WWE doing it so often in just standard main events where people just aren't allowed to win. It's not allowed to win clean. That's where I start with a problem with it. But in a chaos Money in the Bank ladder match, like, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. You can stop the flow of that match just to do something else with somebody interfering. But it was pretty slow and took quite a long amount of time when that did happen. Obviously they wanted to give a proper platform to the Fatu turning on Sokoa bit. The match itself, like, you're enjoying a Money in the Bank ladder match, then that happens and that match kind of stops at that point. But I had fun with it. It was fine. And as I was saying earlier with Seth and Naomi, neither one gets elevated by this. However, the actual story points, I feel like, are pretty good. And I'll hold off on my thoughts with Seth. I have to hold off my Naomi thoughts as well, because I feel like I should talk about that when SmackDown happens, so that'll be next week's show. But with Seth, we'll wait till we get to Raw. That's why I want to feel like I want to talk about it in a positive way. All right, now let's get onto our truth. Onto all this stuff. Bloody hell. So the main event was Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso versus John Cena and the Transphobe. It is what it is. Both Cody and Jey are fully over, so at least the WWE crowds have been hot for this tag. And I'll be honest, I was not expecting this to be another 20 plus minute main event. Like, that length with these lads did not excite me. And then I saw the first 10 minutes of this match, and they did not excite me. Like, even in between the matches, which is something I've talked about with WWE shows, if you're having a long start to like a main event match, or if you're having like a jokey nothing match, it's not that bad, apart from the fact you've got 10 minutes in between. For a lot of the things where it feels like you've had time wasted because you've had 10 minutes building up to the next match happening, and then if it's a joke in the middle of the card, then you can see why people will be a bit, oh, is that it? Like, I've been waiting for the thing to happen, and then it happens, like, oh, is that it? Whilst on an AEW card, it's so quick and fast, like, onto the next thing, that it doesn't matter. Like, it's absolutely fine. Whilst if it's short in a WWE card, the match happens, then you've got to wait another 10 minutes. So here, like, I genuinely, like, I'm not joking when I say, I took 10 minutes making myself a cup of tea, and when I came back, John Cena was just stepping into the ring. I left when, like, Cody was, I can't remember if, like, the video was playing or if Cody had started making his entrance yet. Like, Jesus Christ, talk about extending the show out with nothing. Then the match itself does the same. Like, first 10 minutes of this match is the Transphobe and Cena just working over Jey, and it's just really working him over for like 10 minutes straight. It's like, I've just had 10 minutes waiting for the thing, then it's 10 minutes of just nothing, heel heat. It's just like, this is not for me. Second half, crowd came alive, they absolutely loved it. No wonder I felt mentally done with the show as this tag main was playing out. 10 minutes of nothing followed by 10 minutes of in-match nothing. It's like, oh, what are we doing here, guys? What are we doing here? Eventually the egos of the villains blew up. I said it on last week's show that I liked the note of Cena using the knobhead, even though he has zero respect for the man. But you can also call it the mid-match false hope, purposely afterwards having the Transphobe mess up every attempted offense and nearly cost his team. It generally continues to be irritating that he does get the wrestling notes, like, at least in a WWE style of it. Then having him call for the showman and make himself look good with his drones. But a great spot where he kept hold of the camera, then not cutting away and staying handheld in the ring for a surprise Uso splash. I tied that earlier to the production notes. They referenced it earlier, so it felt natural here. But it is a WWE main event, so we also eventually got our announced table spot. This time, Cody and Cena teasing, only for Oost to spear and the misinformation gullible man to hit an annoyingly beautiful springboard moonsault destroying the desk. When a hooded man jumped to the ring and attacked Cena, and his lower back was visible, so he could see, he was like, oh, who is that? The man taking the belt and gave his former hero a shot to the head, and the crowd going absolutely crazy chanting Truth's name there, all of it, and his segment on Raw did a really good job as well. And then we get into the other truth stuff, with him genuinely being on the list of releases, then getting such a huge response. But the thing I was hearing was that I thought the wording initially was that he'd been released, and then later I had heard that it was more to do with contract not being renewed. On this show, they twisted that a little bit too. All week, the news was that R-Truth and WWE could not reach an agreement with his contract, like taking all owners out of WWE. It's like, oh, just the wording of that is like, oh, we couldn't come to terms, we couldn't agree. But it felt a lot closer to what happened with Carlito, where they thought they could just let go two of their older wrestlers and there wouldn't be much of a fan reaction, and the fan reaction, they might just go, ah, they're two comedic characters and they're a bit older. They thought that was going to be the reaction. And I won't lie, I have seen that reaction in some areas, but they massively underestimated the support for Truth, especially as one of the things that seemed to really be hitting with on people's sponsors afterwards when they were kind of like explaining their reaction was a lot of, in those positions of wrestlers who are over, there just isn't much black representation. And seeing Truth have such longevity and be there and currently getting those big spots with Cena, that meant a lot. That meant a lot actually getting to see that. So taking that away, it definitely hit the reaction. Yeah, it fueled the reaction a little bit for some people. Obviously, he's also been there a very long time. And the main thing I was saying was you've literally just heated up the interest in him. Like, he literally just did it. So thinking you could then just release him is idiotic. You at least need to extend his contract enough for you to quell his support a bit. He's literally at the highest he's going to be for a while because he did the whole match with Cena and he heated him up for it. Why would you think you'd be fine to release him then? You've driven up the support for him. That's the thing that you did. You didn't have to do that. Yeah, so they phrased it as reaching an agreement with his contract when he looked like his contract wasn't just straight up just wasn't being renewed and he was in pairing with Carlito. Absolutely not worked. This it's one of the things that happens in wrestling where a thing feels, you know, relatively easy to dissect. But because it's wrestling, you get fans not wanting to get worked, which again, if you're a fan and you're enjoying the product, who cares if you're getting worked? Get over yourself. It's not that big an issue. You invest in the product, who cares? But they sometimes like twist themselves into thinking that they're being like double faked out or something. Something like this, where it just screams the simple story. Well, I don't know if it counts as release, but they were not going to renew his contract. Same with Carlito. Then he got a response and they changed their mind, offered him the money because obviously the support was there. Feels like a pretty basic, very standard story. Pretty easy to wrap your head around. And not in wrestling. No. Because everything's got to have like a worked angle to it as well. And Triple H's response was just. And there is that thing from WWE to have to be playing it smarter than the fans, which I've seen break down many a TV show writer. Just that need to be a step ahead of the fans. Let's move on over to the Intercontinental Championship. Dominic Mysterio versus Octagon Jr. WWE having a pay-per-view match with another company's luchador that the home fans know nothing about. I don't even have to look. I know the same criticism lobbied at WWE didn't happen. Not because it should, but the initial critique was obviously so disingenuous. That's where the comparisons end, though, because this really was just a perfectly fine telematch, which, as I've said before, in this very show, it's only really a negative because of the 10-minute wait between matches. This is absolutely fine on a faster-flowing card, but on a 10-minute wait, a standard TV match, it feels like a waste of time. The crowd were both really up for the chanting against Dom in Spanish, as well as cheering for him and his antics in his semi-turning face state. Still won with Liv distraction up on the apron before his frog splash victory, though. A short match too, the gap between matches was longer than the thing itself. Just don't watch WWE shows live. Like, I don't know how many times I should keep having to repeat this. Just see stuff like this, where it's 10-minute waits in between a match shorter than 10 minutes. Just don't watch it live. It's Money in the Bank I found a much, much easier watch, because I could just skip all these 10-minute gap. And finally, the Women's Intercontinental Championship, ending on a positive with this show. Lyra Valkyria versus Becky Lynch. Like, yeah, this was great. Nailing the heated feel with the jump right at the bell, escalating to ringside and flowing into a hot finish. The leg drop to a barricade-draped Becky looked awesome too. To be fair, pretty much everything they did looked awesome. Even if in any momentum pause, the crowd were right in there with "We want Truth." Like, they were chanting that man's name. The manhandle slam off Brett's rope crashed us into the finisher kickout final act. The crowd fully on their side for every beat. Such a fast final run that eventually repeated the rapid roll-up ending from the last match. But this time, Lynch didn't hesitate to grab the tights and take Lyra's title away. In punishment, Valkyria had to lift Becky's hand, but the new champion went a step too far, rubbing in her victory and immediately paid for it. Your classic SNL skit rule of three. The third action getting Lyra to put the belt on Becky, which she did, but she also gave the lass a German and a Nightwing for her troubles. But yes, you've got the kind of hokey WWE, you've got to do this thing now, you've got to kiss the foot. Like, just crap like that. However, the match itself, great. great. These two women are so fluid together. It's just a joy to watch. It's one of those where it's fluid, but it, like, the actual impact of the moves is so hard hitting. Maybe it's just because we've got like the Cena era. It's kind of a comment from that era of WWE where the moves just feel a bit floaty. Like they don't have, feel like they've got as much impact as they do nowadays. So that kind of style is just a little bit on display at the moment. That said, you see it here. The moves are just so impactful, and they've got such a fluidness to the and speed to the way that they wrestle. Massive thumbs up there. But yeah, Money in the Bank. It feels a bit like a B show at the moment, and that's maybe just because the winners don't really elevate much. Like last year we had Tiffany Stratton, but this year it's two people who were gonna be there anyway, which I think is fine. It's fine to have years like that. You don't need to elevate somebody up every year. You can just use it for established folks to get to their spots. Like, that's okay. But we will get to that stuff. And actually, we'll get to it pretty quickly. I guess final words on Money in the Bank. It was a fine show. It was easier watching me because I didn't watch it live, so all of those gaps in between, I just skip quickly between it. Can see on the time code though. It really made me laugh where I just left the show playing and John Cena was doing his entrance. I was like, been 10 minutes. I didn't make this cup of tea quick at all. I took my time. I took the piss. I was like, I might have to wind it back, or be in a portion of the match where it's fine, it's slow, whatever. I come back upstairs and it's still entrances. I was like, I took the piss. I took too long and it's still not finished. It's a waste of time. But the crowd seemed to be hot for it though, and it felt like the story spinning out of it could create interest. And when we get to Monday Night Raw, I think Monday Night Raw hits a ground running, which makes Money in the Bank feel more impactful, feel better, purely because you can then see how SummerSlam starts to shape up pretty well with the way that Monday Night Raw went. So let's jump on over to a very hot Arizona. I watched the 2 hours edited version, which is the longest running episode in weeks. A world title match, a John Cena, a King and Queen of the Ring fatal four ways getting started. One has hope. Could this show not be as shit as the past like five? Could they do it? So let's jump on over and we'll start with the main event. World Heavyweight Championship, Jey Uso versus Gunther.
Jey has nothing left in him, and it doesn't appear. Trying to somehow slip out of this sleeper by Gunther. Jey Uso's out. Jey Uso is out, I believe. He is out. Gunther becomes the new world champion.
After zero premium live event defenses, after one whole defense against the transphobe at Saturday night's main event, and that's your lot. Jey Uso has already dropped the title back to his WrestleMania opponent. Lol at the rain. But the Gunter Sammy Seth road it potentially sets up is far more exciting as SummerSlam to WrestleMania route. Like, I just word that, and all those pieces are suddenly like, oh, okay, that feels infinitely more interesting. The fact Jey won the title was the story, which I feel like is pretty apparent in the weeks that have followed. The reign itself, seemingly an unnecessary thought process that's now just swiftly moved on from. The match here was fine. Like, you've seen what these two are like together before, just on this occasion with less time and ad breaks, so arguably it's their most watchable match. Playing the targeted and injured champion card with Jay's stomach all taped up, selling the combination of the tsunami attack and the transphobe announced desk moonsault. The whole portion between the first and second ad breaks completely slow Gunter wearing down and beating. Two breaks in 7 minutes at least set up a cleaner final 10. A Gunter splash dodged into a spear and an Uso splash combo kicked out of with 9 minutes still left on the clock. Room for Jey to continuously show life and kickouts and flurries, exchanging their own moves too. This is a WWE Championship match, lest we forget. You gotta do each other's moves. Gunter locked in a sleeper after Jey missed an Uso splash, pulled back from crawling to the ropes, grounded again after standing back up to his feet. An attempt at a sleeper of his own, but the Austrian slipped out of it and elbowed the man before just locking the hold back in. This is when the crowd read the room. Okay, this is the point in the match where he's tried to escape, he's been stopped from doing so, he's locked back in. This is where then he needs the support of the crowd, and you start amping up as the crowd chant his name, as the crowd start chanting Yeet, which was actually, for me, I give a big thumbs up to Jey, the absolute perfect time to just close his eyes. As soon as they showed, because the camera was just like staying on him, because again, huge positive to this current era of WWE, they don't cut. So they didn't cut from this, so as Jey's fading, they just stayed on him, and it's almost like as a signal, as soon as you heard the fans starting to chant Yeet, he just closed his eyes, and I was like, yes. Yes. In terms of like, when do you show you're giving up? It's when the crowd are amping up and getting to their highest point of support for you. Just close your eyes. You're like, I'm out now. And the rippling realization that followed is that note, just realizing that he was out before the ref called the bell, just slowly rippling through that crowd. I was like, oh, that was actually a pretty cool thing to see in WWE. Because normally they just cheer for the things. Like, you're almost expecting them to just cheer for, yay, where a person won a match. Like, it feels like, for Arizona at least here, Becky didn't get a you deserve it chant, and she even pointed that out. Here they genuinely were in a, oh no, when Jey Uso loses here and Gunther wins. Like, they're genuinely reacting to the product. Like, I've talked about how since Triple H has come in, that there's been a genuine effort to slowly try and reteach or relearn the audience in terms of what they've been conditioned to, how to respond and how to watch the show. Like, it's a very slow process, because that Vince era was very much, you can't get invested in what's happening, so you go, you turn up, you just do whatever chants or whatever. You do the what chant because you're not really listening to what they're saying. You do the we want table spot, which now just, to be fair, now it's technically worse in this era, but the difference is they're actually invested, because those people who weren't invested have mostly left and they're now in watching AEW. But here you'll get a what chant, but they are invested. You'll get a we want tables, but they are still popping for what's happening. You see the France crowd last year where they're doing their waves and their songs and whatever. It's crazy atmosphere, but then they actually react to what's happening in the match. So it's just good to see that the fans invested in a character, and then when it doesn't go his way, they have the right kind of negative reaction to it. A WWE main event as well, without interference, no pausing the match to tell the actual story, just a clean finish with it all told in the ring, which is so rare for WWE TV main events. So incredibly rare. Going off air with Gunther raising the title high with all the pyro going off behind him, but it's what it sets up. Not only is Gunther champion, you've also got Seth Rollins as the Money in the Bank, and obviously, well, he's not going to be cashing in on Gunther. Seth is building up this big heel faction. Money in the Bank feels about right for his for him as well. Like, yes, he could cash in advance, but I feel what's right for his character is more to steal it from somebody. That feels more right for what he's trying to do, because the thing isn't about, he's already proved himself, especially like at WrestleMania, he's proved himself. He doesn't need to win the title in a way of proving himself. Gunther does, because he's so, everything's like second in the ring, he has to prove that. Seth doesn't need to do that, he can steal it. Then takes me to the King and Queen of the Ring matches. We had first round Fatal 4-Ways, where obviously what they were wanting to keep the same amount of lads and lasses in the lineups, but with so many shows close together, there's literally no room for a tournament to breathe. So you, out of necessity, if you want to still keep the same amount of people, just squash all the matches together and cover what would be three matches in one. You would have had two people facing each other, and then the two winners of that one would face each other. Here, you cut out all that down to one match. One men's and one women's Fatal 4-Way in matches that feel very similar to what we were just getting in the Money in the Bank qualifying triple threats. Just like those matches, given time to dance, as we've got 3 hours to fill, pal. So first the women's, and then I'll swing back into the men's so I can talk about Seth and Gunther a little bit to tie that up. So first the women's, Roxanne Perez versus Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley versus Kairi Sane. With the tournament winners receiving a shot at SummerSlam, Ripley again enters this as the proper favourite, and that was a setup with three smaller women for the Aussie to toss about and look powerful against, and the ending purely dancing with that fact. Ripley dominant, Liv went for an opportunistic oblivion, only to be stopped and hit with a riptide, but with the curiously extended leg, which got pulled out of the ring by an interfering Raquel. Perez took advantage of not being involved in the ending flow at all. Kairi, insane elbow on the already down Liv. Roxanne flipping over Sane and stealing the win, leading to more Judgment Day drama backstage, with Finn's plans all apparently working as Liv returned all pissed at Roxy, and we saw Liv again later in the night. So Roxanne Perez, the surprise winner, but it does bounce off of the fact they were elevating Fakir, Perez and Julia all in that ladder match. And then we get to the men's. Dominic Mysterio, Ron Breaker, Penta and Sami Zayn. A fan-pitched idea. So I'm not taking full credit for this, but Gunther's world champ, Seth Rollins' Money in the Bank. How do you get all of these pieces to work together to then send us into a WrestleMania road of interest? Well, if you're doing the normal fan thing, of looking up what worked in the past, just do that again, which has been the case for my entire fandom. Of always the amount of times that I would hear, just do Nation of Domination again. Like, it's just history repeating itself of, now we're looking at what happened in the previous decade of, just do that again, that'll work. However, it doesn't mean you have to do it identically, but I love the idea of Seth being Money in the Bank, Gunther being champion. What if Sami Zayn wins King of the Ring and you just give him the Daniel Bryan booking for a Seth Mania match, but this time actually planned, actually on purpose, as in you do this angle here because that you're generally going to be doing that match. LA Knight was the interfering force in this one, a Money in the Bank revenge on Breaker, which set up Sami to Haluva kick Dom for the win, but I generally just really like that trio. Doesn't mean you have to do it exactly like the Bryan thing. You don't have to have Sami win and that's who Seth immediately cashes on. You maybe have a little bit of time, but I feel like for the story they're going for, Sami finally does it, you could just strike right then with Seth and it could work. I'm generally not against it. I feel like it could could be okay. Yeah, but tell me what you think. I think it's an idea which could work properly well, or at least with those three players holding those three cards, and he can move them about how you wish. But I think for me, that's the thing. We also had, though, John Cena and CM Punk, the other thing that got a lot of talk. So there's a lot of talk about Truth over the weekend. There's a lot of talk about Punk after this show, aka saying goodbye to your morals, justifying the paycheck. Loud, we want Truth chants, giving Cena the opportunity to call the man a gimmick and to crap on the fans for latching onto a current hot thing that they'll just drop and forget about within the year. Really like that, because that shows kind of Cena's character's current frustrations, but also sets up Truth. Punk did the same thing with directly. I feel like Punk's line doesn't quite work as well, because he was saying if you mess with the Truth, you'll get Ron Killings or something like that, which directly sets up exactly what Truth does. I don't think that's necessary at all. Just let Truth be the first person on TV to say Ron Killings. But anyway, out comes Punk to have a look into John Cena's eyes, and for the fans to, you know, anyone who had ammunition already, who were already calling him a hypocrite, this isn't going to help things. Punk positioning himself as the man for the fans in the face of John Cena, folding neatly the fact that 14 years ago the people chose Punk over Cena. You damn well know what you're doing is not right. You know what you're doing is wrong, to the tune of you sold out from the crowd intended for John Cena. But in regards to Punk taking the salary money, as he's saying those words, the crowd chant you sold out, it feels so meta just watching this. Just like, you seriously can't write this shit. As a man says those lines to somebody else, a part of me was just like, are they really trying their best to get him to like activate into annoyed Punk? Like, this is like almost like stress testing how far can they push him. He challenged champion John to a match right there in Phoenix, but the champion's a bad guy, so he teased accepting before telling him, sure, if you follow me to Saudi Arabia. And the crowd gave their big reaction, seemingly aware of Punk's comments given the kind of reaction that it got. I think for me the only confusing thing is afterwards commentary were just talking in a hyped way about, oh, do you think Adam Pearce is going to book that match? But Punk never said anything, because Seth Rollins came out before he could say anything, and he never gave any form of acceptance to John Cena or anything. So it felt like this segment was to just straight up advertise the match as a thing that's happening to get you excited, whilst Punk in the segment never said anything. So I'm not quite sure. My assumption is it's like the reason the fans had that reaction, I feel like it would just stay in that segment and will never be referred to again. He'll just accept it, because what, they can't reference his comments, because they're not going to send their fans to look it up. Like, what did he say? Why would he be conflicted? But yeah, the story on the show, not over Seth's dead body will CM Punk become champion. And looky here, he's got a shiny green briefcase. Like, he held it up and commentary just moved us on. Like, that was it. But it did move us on to Truth's segment later in the show. But I feel like by the time that I've done this show, everybody else, especially on this network, would have talked about Punk in such a succinct way. I'm not really sure what else I can add to those comments. And I know Rich and James, Rich specifically as Slice, they're talking about Punk from Watching Radio this week. It's on the YouTube channel. Specifically, Slice, if you just want to see the Punk comments, it is on the Social Suplex YouTube channel. But yeah, I'm sure he's got justifications in his mind for it. Anyway, it does take us nicely onto our truth. Ron Killings cometh. The commentators blabbed on about Bayley and Becky Lynch in the aftermath of that segment, when a hooded lad with a full head mask climbed between them and up onto the announce desk. The crowd were immediately onto what was happening and chanted on their feet. Don't let anybody tell you that you don't matter. They heard, they listened, they felt, and they understood. Our truth is back for all of you. But I'm back for me too. Not only did you bring R-Truth back, you got me. R-Truth can be too funny all the time. R-Truth can be too nice, too kind, not me. But any of you who thinks I'm an act, I'm a sideshow act, you think I'm a gimmick. He then pulled out a pair of scissors and my AEW reflexes kicked in before I remembered what show I was watching. Scissors in AEW, but they're like, oh shit, nope, shit's about to go down. Okay, yeah, brace, get ready. In a kind of like, oh, violence, kind of a squeamy reaction. Calm yourself down. It's a PG show on TV or on Netflix. With PG American Standards advertising. Isn't going to mean nothing. And he cut off his dreads, with the crowd doing full huge shock faces. The truth has set me free. I am Ron Killings. I am the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Now put some respect on my name. And then he walked through the crowd, with the crowd all chanting for truth as he walked out. I thought this was a top notch, phenomenal, but really high quality follow up to what happened at Money in the Bank. He's got that huge pop, and just having this here, I felt like it was a really strong way just to immediately send him down a completely different route. You can start taking him seriously as a character just off of those two shows. even though like last time we saw him wrestling, it wasn't that long ago. It was against Jeff Cobb, and it was just here's stupid R-Truth getting beaten up. He's the enhancement guy for Cobb to look good against. Like, he's nothing. And then almost for stuff not on the show, suddenly brought back, and he's this whole new rejuvenated character. And I'll move on to the other notes. Shall we start with Nikki Bella? Feels strange to see talent from the 2010s now treated as the legends backstage. Like, I'm not older now. Shut up. Time isn't real. Got the crowd panning shot for the pop, but that didn't really come. She was there to promote Evolution. That's counter-programming. Before getting interrupted by a pissed off Liv Morgan, Nikki stirred the Roxanne pot to get the ooh diss response from the crowd and ate an oblivion for her troubles. We had a wee contest between AJ Styles and Chad Gable, I guess to give AJ a win and show Gable continuing to lose as El Grande's victories keep mounting. The second ever and new women's intercontinental champion Becky Lynch had a wee post-win gloat. Not happy about Lyra getting the final word in a mirror to how she herself claimed victory after their first match. Called out the former champion to show some grace and make her wrong right. Instead, just jumped by Bayley in all white to make it clear she's still a goodie as she gave the Irish lass comeuppance of taking her out of the WrestleMania tag. And finally, of course, WWE audience connected with Mr. Iguana over everyone else out of AAA. Vikingo. Nah, this guy's got a toy iguana. He's painting his face and he does weird little bits in his matches. Of course they connected with Mr. Iguana. I'm not like a huge Mexican wrestling fan. It's more of things just trickle through to me. So I was like, yeah, of course. But anyway, that brings me to the end of the week. This Monday Night Raw was I feel like the truth segment is a pretty good example for me of how I felt about this Raw, where I felt like it was a pretty decent follow-up to Money in the Bank, and the show itself didn't really lull. So I don't really have that many negatives to talk about. Like, a lot of the stuff coming out of the show was mainly, like, in terms of, like, the show itself was mainly a positive. The punk stuff rightly stirs discussion as you're watching a man who apparently had really strong morals just drop all those morals. So, again, highly recommend just watch Rich and James's talk. you can guess how I feel about it. By the way, I'm talking context. It's all there. Anyway, I will be back this time next week to talk about Friday Night SmackDown, with it be the SmackDown after Money in the Bank, and I'll talk about Monday Night Raw, as the actual excitement building up isn't in WWE. It's in AEW. They are hurtling towards their biggest show of the year with such great momentum. They are in a really hot period right now. Things are just flying again. We're past the feeling is back. We're now just into, like, this is just a great show to watch every single week. We're back into that territory. It's not just a feeling. Yeah, it's fully there. We're fully there. Which just means that it's a very exciting time to watch AEW. And with WWE, we're coming out of a month of just air. And we're finally getting the gears going. And we can see the road towards SummerSlam. So I finally have, like, some positivity to the programming compared to nothing but positivity with the opposition. And the idea of WWE just running so many shows. As I was saying, we've got King of the Ring coming up. Not only have we got King of the Ring, we've got Evolution. And technically, if you watch that stuff, we've got the NXT stuff on that weekend as well. So not only do they run more shows, with them doing the counter-programming as well, it means it's even more shows, and it's not a period where they're particularly hot. But at least now we've got the direction of SummerSlam, which might be the benefit of SummerSlam becoming two nights. Like, they've got to build it up to make it a big deal to try and sell enough tickets for two nights. So you make it a big deal, you make King of the Ring a bigger deal, which they started last year, and you start really going with those storylines. So yeah, we'll see if they manage it. I've always felt a bit negative on there being more than one double night of action. Like, if you have to do two night shows, I've always felt like more than one is a bit of a quantity over quality type of thing, which might kind of dilute stuff. Not every big show should be like that. And, like, even with New Japan, when they did it with Wrestle Kingdom, like, no, not right. It's not for you. For WWE, I feel like WrestleMania. Like, for WrestleMania, I'm kind of okay with it. SummerSlam isn't a big enough of a deal. Obviously, you can change that. You can change the perception. That's how perception works. It is changeable. But still, anyway, I will be back this time next week to talk about those shows. Thank you for listening, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I will be back this time next week to talk about WWE, so you don't have to watch it. And with that, bid you adieu. Adios.